From the Lynn DeGrant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It's September the 13th, 2022. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities in Newmarket, Indiana. Brian Olson from NDSU, North Dakota State University Extension, will be here to explore yesterday's USDA report figures. And then we'll talk with Don Day as we close out our time together to take a look at the weather forecast on this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
December corn today settled at 692 and three quarters. That was down 3 1/4 cents. The March at 697 and a quarter, 2 1/4 lower. November beans, 9 1/2 lower at 1478 and three quarters. And January at $14.84, down 8 1/4. Bean meal futures down $10.90. The bean oil, 59 cents higher for the day. And the wheat futures up a penny and three quarters for the soft red at 860 1/2. The hard red up 6 3/4 at 933 3/4 cents. Live cattle futures in Chicago finished the lead at 144.80, down 95 cents. Feeders were down 260 and lean hogs up $2.92 1/2. Crude oil, 41 cents lower at $87.37 a barrel, and the wholesale price of gasoline at $2.47 6 up 3 1/10 cents. On this turnaround Tuesday, I suppose, is Wayne Nelson here to join us to talk about the marketplace. Hi, Wayne. Why was there not follow-through from yesterday's big up move in the soybean market, do you think?
Well, I think basically it all comes down to the idea of the consumer price index, the inflation factor, and they're continuing to show a very large inflation continuing to take. And along with that, we've been told by the feds that if it stays up like this, that they're probably going to increase at least 0.75% in their next meeting. And this, of course, if you look at the stock market today and you look at the grains, that basically it's saying that they're going to try to put their foot on the brake here is for this economy and what's going on. And I think that's really what turned around and done it. Also, I mean, as we run up against some pretty stiff resistance yesterday, you know, with the run up, the 690 and the D's corn was pretty much a resistance level, I mean, the $7 being the very heavy resistance level. And of course, in the beans, when you approach $15, I think that was a very heavy resistance level. When you put the inflation factor back in and the Fed's raising the rates, that sort of put a top on things.
Do you think that there's much left to run in the soybeans once we get into the harvest season?
Well, yeah, I tell you what, that's a big question. You know, they did go out in the fields for this survey, but the beans aren't far enough along to really tell. And we haven't seen any. We've seen a few fields of beans down here, some that made 55 or so along the way, but they were 1.9s, and we don't know what these beans are going to make along the way. And the crush margins are coming down a little bit here as we look right close, so processes aren't going to be able to pay up as much as they were. But, the biggest thing along the way that helped the grains, was especially the wheat, was the way that Russia was talking about whether to keep that corridor open for exports for the Ukraine.
I'm wondering whether you think this crop is actually better than what USDA put out. And is that based on the number of pods that weren't there that may still be setting and available as we finish maturing this crop out?
I'm not sure about the number of pods, but I do know that a lot of areas got some very good rains over the last 2 weeks. And if those pods continue to fill, they might have been flat and not looking like a whole lot or whatever. But I think that all in all, our bean crop looks like it's in a little better shape than the corn. It was planted later because we were a little wet early. Our corn went in later. The beans went in that way. And I think that it looks along the way like it didn't have the heat at the bad time like it was in the development of the corn. So we could see a little better bean crop out of things than what we are thinking right now. But, like I say, we are seeing the basis levels come in on the beans a little bit because the crush margin is getting tighter rather than wider like that. You know, I mean, it's not... they're not going to be paying up for beans down the road. I mean, the quick shipment bids are going away.
Hey, thank you. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Todd.
That's Wayne Nelson. He's with L&M Commodities in Newmarket, Indiana. Joined us on this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report. It comes to you from Illinois Public Media online at willag.org. Here's something you should sign up for. Starting Thursday of this week and running for 6 Thursdays in a row at 11 o'clock for 1 hour, the Farm Doc team will host its fall webinar series. You can sign up for them under the webinars tab at farmdocdaily.illinois.edu this week. Gary Schnitke and Krista Swanson will be talking about planning for the 2023 growing season. You'll want to join them then. Again, it's absolutely free. This is the first in the series of 6. You can sign up today at farmdocdaily.illinois.edu under the webinars tab. Yesterday afternoon, the United States Department of Agriculture released the weekly crop progress report. It shows 95% of the corn crop around the 18 reporting states has reached the dough stage. That normally is at 96%. The dense stage at 77 is just 2 percentage points behind the rolling 5-year average, and 25% of the crop is matured. The 5-year average is 30%. 5% of the crop around the 18 states has been harvested. 4% is the 5-year average. The condition of the crop, 41% good and 12% excellent. 97% of the soybeans are setting pods. That's pretty close to the 5-year average. 22% are dropping leaves behind the 28% rolling 5-year average. And the condition is 45% good and 11% excellent. 10% of the winter wheat has now been planted. 7% is the rolling 5-year average. Here are the updates from Illinois, Minnesota, and Iowa.
This is Melissa Bond. Average rainfall statewide still left Iowa farmers with 6 days suitable for field work during the week ending September 11, 2022. Field work included chopping corn, harvesting corn for seed, cutting hay, and seeding cover crops. Producers were also preparing equipment for harvest. Topsoil moisture condition rated 16% very short, 29% short, 54% adequate, and 1% surplus. Corn in the dough stage or beyond was 98%, 2 days ahead of the 5-year average. 84% of Iowa's corn crop has reached the dense stage or beyond, 1 day behind last year. 23% of the state's corn crop was mature, 2 days behind last year and 1 day behind the 5-year average. Corn condition fell 3 percentage points to 63% good to excellent. With virtually all soybeans setting pods, 48% have reached coloring or beyond, 4 days behind last year and 2 days behind the 5-year average. Soybeans dropping leaves were at 9%, 1 week behind last year and 5 days behind the average. Soybean condition dropped 3 percentage points to 63% good to excellent. Pasture condition remained 32% good to excellent. For the USDA NAS Iowa Field Office, this is Melissa Bond.
This is Mark Schleusener, Illinois State Statistician with the USDA's National Agricultural Statistics Service. Last week was slightly wetter than average in Illinois, while temperatures were very close to normal. Rainfall averaged 79 one-hundredths of an inch across the prairie state, and that was more than one-tenth of an inch above normal. Temperatures averaged 69.9 degrees, and that was slightly below normal for this time of year. There were 5.8 days suitable for field work around Illinois last week, and topsoil moisture was reported as 4% very short, 24 short, 70 adequate, and 2% surplus as of Sunday. 91% of soybean acres were setting pods compared to 97% for the 5-year average. 15% of soybean acres were dropping leaves compared to 20% normally. Soybean conditions improved slightly and were rated 10% very poor to poor, 23% fair, and 67% good to excellent. 90% of the Illinois corn crop has reached the dough stage or beyond. That compares to 97% normally. 70% of corn acres have reached the dense stage compared to 84% normally. 16% of corn acres are mature compared to 36%, and 1% of corn acres have been harvested so far this year. The condition of the Illinois corn crop was reported as 9% very poor to poor, 19% fair, and 72% good to excellent. Finally, pasture conditions improved and were rated 13% very poor to poor, 35% fair, and 52% good to excellent. This has been Mark Schleusener with the Heartland Region of USDA's National Agricultural Statistics Service in Springfield.
This is Dan Loftus, State Statistician. Minnesota had 5.7 days suitable for field work during the week, and topsoil moisture supplies rated 4% very short, 18% short, 72% adequate, and 6% surplus. Corn in or beyond the dough stage reached 83%. Corn dented reached 23%, that's 6 days behind the five-year average. Corn condition was rated 2% very poor, 5% poor, 28% fair, 49% good, and 16% excellent. Soybean setting pods reached 95%. Soybeans coloring reached 11%, and that's 4 days behind average. Soybean condition was 1% very poor, 5% poor, 28% fair, 53% good, and 13% excellent. And lastly, pasture condition was rated 3% very poor, 8% poor, 25% fair, 51% good, and 13% excellent. For the USDA NAS, Minnesota Field Office, this is Dan Loftus.
Our thanks go to the statisticians for their weekly updates of crop progress in their regions. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. We're joined by Frayne Olson, agricultural economist with North Dakota State University Extension, located in Fargo on campus. Thank you so much for being with us. Earlier in the week, USDA updated the crop production and the World Agricultural Supply and Demand Estimate reports. I want to talk a little bit about soybeans in your state. That will be a big deal. What were the changes that make a difference to you, and what will you tell farmers about them?
Yeah, obviously, this is kind of the shock that came out of the last WASD was the soybean yield estimates. Most of the traders were expecting kind of a flat number, maybe even up a little bit, and it was down some, which, again, I think surprised a lot of folks. And when you look at the states and kind of the adjustments that the USDA made and their statewide averages, it was kind of on these transitional area curves, or kind of with a fringe of the traditional soybean growing area, especially in the western area. When you look specifically at states, the North Dakota number was down a little bit, the South Dakota as well as the Nebraska number was down a little bit. So, by focusing really on the hardcore corn soybean states, you may not have seen that. And I think a lot of traders kind of put too much weight or emphasis, if you will, on those corn belt, those core states. And it's these transition areas now that are starting to suffer, in particular in the Western Corn Belt. So the shock to the market, of course, was the yield number. As a result, because of the tighter yields, tighter supplies, there were some adjustments in the usage, the consumption part. And that's not uncommon when USDA makes a cut in the production, we also make some adjustments in the forecast for use. Most of the cuts in the usage came from the export market versus domestic crush, which obviously makes some sense because the export market is a bit more price sensitive than the domestic market is, especially for soybeans. Domestically, or looking at it with the numbers kind of at the highest level, those were the ones that I think everybody's going to be talking about and has been talking about. There was one or two little subtle changes that I guess I noticed and have been kind of paying attention to. And one of them, it's more on the international stage. Now, it's a little bit early to try and really talk too much about how big is the South American crop going to be. They're basically just starting their planting season right now. But the expectation, the current kind of mindset within the marketplace, is that Brazil is going to increase their acreage. If they get an average yield for their crop, they're going to have this monster crop coming, much higher than their previous record. Add on top of that, what USDA over the last several months has been slowly ratcheting down or decreasing the forecast for soybean imports from China. What are the total imports that China is going to have for their soybeans? And there's a lot of reasons for that. Part of their economy is slowing a little bit. Part of it is their pork industry has gone through some financial troubles, and so they're not growing or expanding their numbers quite as rapidly as we expected. But when you start looking, when USDA first came out with their forecast for total imports of Chinese soybeans, it was about 99, 100 million metric ton, which was a pretty strong number. It's a pretty good number based on history. But they've slowly, over the last several months, kind of been ratcheting or taking that down. And the current number is about 97 million acres. So here's what my concern is. When we start looking a little bit further into the winter months, and trying to put a marketing plan together at the farm level, if we start looking at this very, very large increase, this massive increase in the South American crop and the production and availability there, as well as some minor contraction on the purchasing side, especially for, again, China being the largest soybean buyer. You know, we have a window here in the U.S. for being kind of the go-to place for exports, but it's a relatively short and tight window. And what I'm really concerned about is if that South American crop even comes in average, that there's some of that Chinese buying may be a little bit slow to come back to the U.S. in anticipation of the possibility of buying cheaper soybeans out of the Brazilian crop. So I do think we have a window. I think the fact that we tightened up our S&D on our carryover stocks on soybeans is going to be important. I think that'll add some more volatility, obviously, to the soybean market. But I don't want farmers to become too complacent and think that this is going to last for a long time.
USDA lowered both the corn and soybean acreage. Normally, we think of them as about 180 million acres combined. They're roughly 3 million acres short of that. Does that jibe with what you know about has happened in North Dakota and other places?
Yeah, and as we start getting some more numbers, especially for where I'm at here in the Northern Plains, we had kind of a wet spring, I think, as everybody remembers. So there was this huge debate about how many acres are actually going to get seeded in the region, and more importantly, what crops are going to get seeded, because we have this tendency to start flipping things around depending upon the season and the planting date. When I cross-check kind of the numbers that USDA is looking at, and again, they did resurvey northern Minnesota, North Dakota, South Dakota for planted acreage to try and get the as good and accurate assembly of numbers as possible. And now we start getting some prevent plant numbers coming out of the FSA. Now, the FSA calculations are going to be different than what NAS does, so they never completely match up. But from my sense, as I look at the numbers, I do think they came relatively close. I guess there's nothing that really jumps out at me that says, boy, that looks a little bit confusing or doesn't jive with what I'm hearing from farmers and industry people, in particular, some of the grain elevators. So I do think that the numbers coming out of USDA, at least for this region, are relatively close. And I don't have any real big arguments with it.
How concerned are the beef cattle producers in the Western United States about the availability of both hay and corn, and what they'll have to do in order to feed their animals?
Yeah, so we're at up here in the Northern Plains. We had that problem last year. Last year, we were desperately short of hay, and everybody's just scrambling to find anything that the cow could eat, in particular beef cows could eat, that to keep her going. Now it's flipped. It's absolutely flipped where you're looking at the Southern Plains being that problematic area. And of course, with pastures being pretty burnt up, the hay crop being relatively short, hay prices have really popped. It's really increased. And again, when we look at total cattle numbers, there tends to be a lot more in Texas and Oklahoma region than we do have here in the Northern Plains. So there is some herd liquidation going on. I do think that there's some question about how many of those replacement heifers will be held back, because again, you got to feed those all through the winter. And if you're short of hay or you're short of grass, that can be a challenge. Now, for those that do have some corn available as a supplement, whether you're backgrounding or grower operation, or whether you're trying to keep the cow herd alive, that is a possibility. But I know a lot of the cow-calf folks think feeding corn to a beef cow is kind of a losing proposition. They want to, especially with corn, high corn prices. So there is this concern, and again, especially in the southern regions, this is having an impact on herd size, the culling rates, and of course that trickles down for the next several years on beef prices and the beef availability. So I know when I talk to my counterpart on the livestock side that does all the livestock economics and the price forecasting, etc. That is one thing that we're looking for, is higher beef prices as we move into the next couple of years because of this tightening of the cow herd.
And no, this isn't your area exactly, but since you're talking, and I understand that this is the case everywhere, to the economist that's handling the livestock numbers, are they concerned about liquidation of not only the livestock, but of the livestock out of the system completely by producers? And does that mean there will be more consolidation, or there'll just be fewer animals?
So when we looked at past cycles, it's a great question. When we look at kind of at past cycles, there's a combination of both. For those ranchers or cattlemen that are looking, or even hog producers that are looking at nearing their retirement and they don't really have anybody else sticking around to take over the operation, they look at this as a great opportunity to kind of be able to go out on a high note. And some of those animals never do get replaced. But we do see a consolidation. So of the operations that are in existence, several of those obviously get larger, they get more concentrated. They do rebuild, but we're also looking at some more efficiency, right? We're looking at the pounds of meat that are available per animal. So part of it is the number of head, but we also have to recognize that the slaughter weights have also been improving. So, you know, there's this doing the math on the livestock side gets to be a lot more complicated. But the short story is, yes, we tend to see more of a consolidation. But it is surprising to me anyway, personally, that how well and how resilient the cattle numbers are, and as well as hog numbers really are. It's just they get concentrated in larger operations. And so they do rebuild, they do recover. You know, the economics and the pricing signals do work over time. And so I do think that there will be a rebuilding of the herd. We may not get quite back to the numbers we had before, but I do think we'll get back because the demand base will be there.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, always a pleasure. I always appreciate visiting.
That's Frayne Olson. He is an agricultural economist at NDSU, North Dakota State University. Let's check in now with Don Day at Day Weather in Cheyenne, Wyoming. Thanks, Don, for being with us. What's the forecast for the Midwest?
Over the next 7 to 10 days or so, we're going to see most of the Corn Belt have temperatures at or maybe slightly below average, as there's going to be a decent amount of frontal system activity moving across the Northern Plains and in the Great Lakes, and some of this frontal activity will be moving into the Corn Belt and Midwest. The two things these fronts will do is bring, number one, those temperatures that will be slightly cooler, and also a fairly good chance for more rain and thunderstorm activity. And it's going to be the northwestern and western Corn Belt areas that have the best chances of rain. That would be Iowa, Missouri, parts of eastern Nebraska, the eastern Dakotas, Minnesota, and Wisconsin. Now, we do not expect the thunderstorm coverage over central and northern Illinois and central and northern Indiana to be as extensive. It'll be those northwestern and western areas of the Corn Belt and maybe the southern areas of Illinois, Indiana, into the Ohio Valley having the best chances of rain. And in those areas I just mentioned, rainfall amounts are likely going to be between 1 to 2.5 inches. The lighter rainfall amounts are generally going to be anywhere from 1/4 to 3/4 of an inch.
Thanks, Don. Don Day is with Day Weather. He is in Cheyenne, Wyoming, and joined us on this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report. It came to you from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world. Find us online. Listen to us on demand anytime you'd like at willag.org, willag.org. Today, you'll not only find there information from the ag economist, crop scientist, and animal scientist here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois, a way to click and play our audio programming directly from the website, but also yesterday's USDA reports on our homepage, including the numbers from the crop production report and the World Agricultural Supply and Demand Estimate. It's all at willag.org, W-I-L-L-A-G.org. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.